Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Matt Hunt, founder of the Protein Ball Company. That was better, wasn't it, Matt? Welcome.
Welcome. Nice to be here. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure to have you. So you founded the Protein Ball Company 11 years ago. Perhaps you can run us back to how you got into starting the company and kind of the journey that you've been on since then.
Yeah, absolutely. The journey goes back quite far, but I'll make it a couple of minutes. But as a child, I wasn't doing particularly well at school. From a 14 to 16 year old period. And I live right by Romford Market. And I strangely worked on a fruit and nut stall for a couple of years. And I really understood like how it all went together and the kind of customers we had. And now rolling on like 30 odd years, it's kind of strange that I'm selling fruit and nuts, but in a natural format, which is a ball. So my wife and I started Protein Ball 11 years ago. We had another business running, which was Olobs, and that's been running for 14 years. And Olobs was putting small olives in a bag, and we put 10 olives, and we become the first small snacking olive in the world. And we got it on United Continental Delta into Walmart. And we were selling around 500,000 bags per month. So we've sold about 70,000 bags of Olobs, which took us into the Protein Ball Company. And we thought we'd copy the same concept and put some bite-sized protein balls in the bag. And 11 years later, we're really starting to see the fruition of that is working.
Wow. So did you sell the Olive Company or you just transitioned out of it?
We've still got that at the moment. That's transitioning. That's kind of a whole new story because we've always outsourced the olives because they have to be packed at source because of the olive. And so we've worked through different countries to have it manufactured for us, which has been Spain, Morocco, and Greece. And when you work with outsourced companies, sometimes it's really difficult to check all of the quality issues. So we had two containers go to the US, which have slight variations that we're kind of in negotiations at the moment because we pulled out of Walmart. But that is why when we started the Protein Ball Company, we actually set up production ourselves. And that was only my wife, Haley, and I, and that was another guy called Tim. And we worked in a small kind of double factory. And we got a small machine over from India, and we decided that we're going to control everything from the ingredients, selection, traceability, to production, so that what leaves the factory is completely in our hands. And I think that that was one of the hardest moves over the years, but that has been the strength of why we're continuing to grow.
Okay, brilliant. And so how did the idea of the Protein Ball Company come around? What was the inspiration?
Yeah, it was a defining moment, actually, is that I was in a show called Expo West, which is in West Coast in Anaheim. And this was about 12 years ago. And I could see that there was protein everywhere across the US market, protein water, protein breakfast, protein bagels, protein bars. And in the UK, protein hadn't really started then. So we knew that when I come back, we knew that we wanted to copy the Olobs concept and have small bite-sized protein. But we first started looking at bars and then realized there were quite good productive bar companies. We'd never be able to keep up with their volume. So we went something different, which was the protein balls. So from that moment, I remember coming back with my wife and saying, let's just do it. Let's move into protein. And we were one of the pioneers, really, of the protein snacks. We're talking 11, 12 years ago. And since then, we have seen some monstrous companies come and go and some that are absolutely flying from zero to 100 million in like 5, 6, 7 years, likes of Grenade and Barbells and Paul Phil and some really big live companies. And we're just kind of watching them because things are starting to slowly turn on the market.
How are they turning on the market?
There has been a kind of, I'd say the consumer is pretty wary nowadays. At the start, protein was just something you consumed. And you wanted to get as much as you could. You'd finish your gym or not even go to the gym. It was all about just protein and the percentage. So you look on a bar and it'll say 20%, 22%, no like low carb, no sugar. And you think, okay, that's perfect. But Joe Wicks has just had a program on recently called Killer Bar, where he used the same kind of ingredients, which is like emulsifiers, sweeteners, humectants, glycerols, polydextrose, and he put it all into a bar. And he said, this is what you're eating when you eat a health bar. This is kind of what the ingredients are. Yeah, it's high protein, but there's so much shit in there that your body can't really, it's not really good for you, even though you're getting the high protein. So the Protein Ball Company has always been about natural ingredients. We roll just with peanut butter, roasted peanuts. We roll with dates and put it all together to bind it. Then we use freeze-dried fruits. We use seeds like sunflower seeds, flat golden flaxseed, chia seeds, and it's like healthy fruit nut balls with protein. And we use either whey protein for our high protein range, or we use a vegan protein mix, which can be pumpkin, pea, or brown rice. So these are kind of kitchen staple ingredients that you would get rolled into a ball. And I think that consumers nowadays are reading the back of the pack and saying, like, I don't really know what these ingredients are. There's 20 of them. I'm just going to go for this, which is fruit, nuts, and protein.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are reading the back of the packs. I certainly am myself. And as I said before we went live with this, I saw the Protein Ball Company protein balls at the golf club on the weekend. And obviously, I knew that we had this podcast scheduled, so I bought a packet to try them out, and they were delicious. So
that's great, Tom.
Interesting what you said about the other kind of, I guess you'd call them the protein bars made with the more artificial ingredients, and how there's a backlash around at the moment, and more of a health drive going on.
There is. And then there's a lot of talk at the moment about GLP-1. And so I know it's quite expensive. I don't personally use it, but I know people who do. And so they're eating smaller, more kind of dense bars and protein balls and snacks because their appetite has been suppressed. So GLP-1 is really helping us because we are so natural and clean. It's what you want to have if you're going to have a nutrient-dense snack. HFSS, which is the government, which is about like sugars and salts and fats, and we tick all of them boxes. And we're small enough. We are 37 people. We've just taken on one now. We've got an interview, maybe 38. But we're small enough that we can adapt. So we can look at trending flavors. We can see that high fiber is getting big, so we can bring out a high fiber range. We can kind of move with the market, but everything we do will always be gluten-free, no added sugar, no added sweeteners. Quality is our pillar. So I think we're in a really good position. The last 10 years have been kind of frustrating to see companies go from zero to 100 million selling rubbish. And it's kind of put us in a position now where we haven't backed down, we haven't changed our values, and I think our time is coming. We're just about rolling in the right direction.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So going back to the business side of things, what was that like? Did you bootstrap at the beginning, or did you raise some money? And what's that journey been like as you grew the business, et cetera?
Yeah, we've always bootstrapped, unfortunately. We didn't really come from rich background. I'm a Romford Market boy. So everything we did was like buying small amounts and seeing if that works. And if it didn't work, moving to something else. With the Olux, it was literally one barrel of olives, which was 160 euros. With the Protein Ball Company, it was a machine that made gulabs, which is a Indian sweet, which is rolled. And it was from India, and it was secondhand, and it come over. It didn't really have much safety, but it was a really cheap way of kind of seeing if we could roll a ball. We have worked with some investors, like they call them armchair investors, because they're not so hands-on. And that's with the SEIS and the EIS, so that they get some money back on their taxes. And that's worked so that we can raise some money and buy some machinery or kind of move the business in a different direction with marketing and sales. We raised money about a year ago because it was the Protein Ball Company's 10-year anniversary. So we decided that we were going to have a complete rebrand, and we were going to, that was our present to ourselves. And it's a lot of money, but we worked with a wonderful branding agency called Robot Foods based in Leeds. And they're kind of well known. They're about the 11th best in the world at the moment. And they took our brand, and we sat down with them, and over a period of 2 or 3 months, we looked at the values of the brand, the tone of voice, the vibrancy and the colors, the story that Hayley and I wanted to tell, that we were foodies, we wanted that to come through. And the rebrand, which only launched about 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, is doing phenomenal. It was probably the best thing that we've done for the business since we started.
Wow, that's amazing. And so what did they do that was significantly different to what you had before?
So I think, like, I read that every 10 years a brand should change anyway, because it gets kind of, it sits on the shelf and it doesn't look different. And we've seen like brands that are coming through that are really vibrant in color. And we wanted to be vibrant and we wanted to be ballsy because we're selling balls and we wanted to stand up to all of these big companies because we're relatively small. But the challenge was we also wanted to be natural. So we really want to say, look, we're the best. Well, this is what we do. But then we're never going to have the same protein count. And we had to be natural. So we come up with the phrase ballsy by nature. And we trademark that because that is everything that the company is about. We can phone big supermarket chains and we can tell them you need to stock our product because we are so natural. And then we go down that avenue. And so they looked at our packaging and they just made it come alive with colors, with tone of voice, with looking at the copy on the back and how we speak and how we kind of put together all of our new marketing and our comms. And they've really made that come alive. So I think going to a really big branding agency was the best move that we've done so far.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, I think you're right there. It's very eye-catching and it's distinctive. You can recognize it, kind of, it can catch your eye if you see it. In a supermarket or something. So going back to those early days, how did you, presumably it was kind of in the kitchen making a few protein balls and seeing what it all looked like and tasted like when it came together, but how did you make those first sales and get the ball rolling initially?
That's pretty simple. We kind of got these little pre-made bags. We rolled some balls. My wife is the recipe developer, Haley. She puts all of this together. She's wonderful, understands all of the macros, understands all of the inclusions and how it works. She rolled the balls by hand, put them in the bags, we sealed them and sent them off to different buyers. I must say we were lucky, but also we did see that the market was opening. But within the first year, we were around about £500,000. And within the second year, we were £1.7 million. So we really had a very fast first 2 years. And because of Olaf's and because we learned how to move olives around the world, we learned logistics, we learned custom brokers, we learned trucking facilities and everything, because we were pretty much moving 500,000 bags a month. But with the protein ball company, we started to export from day one. So within year two, we already had Switzerland and Denmark and Germany. We'd already started looking at Singapore and Japan and America. So for us, it's always about a hedge. So we start with a brand and then we say, how can we hedge that and how can we hedge that? So for instance, with the protein ball company, we started with the protein ball. Then I said, let's hedge and let's go for export because maybe that would be bigger than the UK. And then we will hedge again and we say, okay, let's also look at private label where we make it for some big customers under their brand name. And that hedges us again. And when COVID hit, we were just under 5 million mark and we wiped out 80% of our business. It went because we weren't big in supermarkets. But luckily, because we had one or two private label business operations going, that got us through COVID. And so we've always kept private label. And our private label is just over 50% of our business. And most of our private label is across in the USA. We have 2 to 3 containers that we make in Worthing, just outside Brighton. We sail across into from Felixstowe straight away over into New Jersey. So private label is a hedge on our business. We have our business, which is our own brand. And we also have export as well. And that's what we always try and do with a business.
Wow. And so going back, though, that first 500K you did in year one, how did you make those sales, given nobody had heard of you?
Yeah, we found this amazing guy who'd been working with a local cake company who understood like what you have to do. And that was really key. And he brought the documentation that helped us to get certified by Salsa, which is kind of quite a small level entry plan starting game. And from that, we were managing to get some accounts and we would literally just put it in the post and send it out to customers. We'd get really good feedback because they tasted so good. They were so clean. The recipes and our mission and our vision has never changed. It's to make protein ball snacking easy for consumers and to not put anything in it that you wouldn't want to consume yourself. When my two boys eat it, when my mother-in-law, my mother, my father eat it, I don't want to think, oh, I shouldn't have really put that palm oil and I shouldn't have put that Humex in and I shouldn't have, it's so clean, you know, anyone can eat it. And that's what we really like. We don't ever want to go back and to kind of make it cheaper and to put rubbish in just to hit the macros. Because nowadays it's all smoke and mirrors. And if you think, okay, I've got 20% protein and no sugars, that's exactly what I need. But what gives you no sugars? And the answer is horrible sweeteners and horrible other stuff. And so you can get sweetness from like a date or from a piece of fruit or from adding other ingredients. You don't need to add all the sweeteners. And that's our key. No sweeteners, no sugars, gluten-free, GMO-free, palm oil-free. The whole works. We're kosher. We're halal certified. We're BRCAA. We've got like 10 things after us.
Wow. Okay. So you've grown the team. Obviously, you mentioned seven people. So how is that team structured and kind of who's doing what? Who's responsible for what?
Yeah, so we have an overall site manager, David, and he will help look after the team to make sure it's moving forward. My wife, Haley, will look at operations, new NPD. Actually, she's in there at the moment because we've got this brand new fancy machine and we're making these incredible balls that are going to launch in January, which we're a bit more indulgent. But she will overlook the operations side. We have an operations manager, we have a warehouse manager, and we have sales manager. But we come together for meetings once a week for big stuff and nearly daily for huddles for smaller stuff, which is usually production. Production is probably 15 to 20 people out of the 37 people, and then the rest are spread in different departments. But when the business grows, it usually grows with production operators because we're usually picking up more business and we need more. We're producing about 60,000 bags at the moment per day. And we put six balls in each bag. So we're producing 360,000 balls per day. And our aim by March next year is to get up to 500,000 balls per day. That's our aim. And so we have a pretty slick operation. It's not completely automated because the costs of robotics and machinery is far too big for us. But it's in a good way that each line's around like 20,000 bags and we've got three lines.
Wow, that's very impressive, I must say. So one, obviously I don't know if you're familiar with kind of the role that I do as a fractional CFO, but one thing that I care about as a fractional CFO is understanding cash flow, understanding profitability, and essentially keeping the business healthy, making sure that we have a process of seeing what's working and what's not working in the business.
Yeah.
How has that been something you've managed to keep on top of as you've grown the business? Because obviously your revenue, that sounds like it's growing very fast.
Yeah.
And growing revenue, adding people to the team without getting yourself into problems in terms of profitability is a big challenge and obviously something you've navigated well.
Actually, yeah, still navigating it. I don't know if companies can ever do it well because the rising costs and the increases from wages to four units where they're probably about 40% in 3 years to all utilities to... Or every time there's kind of a global crisis, we see the logistics are going up. So moving a container to the US, which could be $2,000, can go up to $8,000 or $9,000. So everything is completely changing day to day, week to week. We have an accountant, obviously, in the company, and we also have a management accountant. And the management accountant will work with the accountant and will give us a monthly recommendation on how much stock holding we have and what we should be doing and where our bottom line is and pinch points as to customers that haven't paid and chasing up, looking at why there's abnormalities, i.e. we spend so much on packaging that month and not the month after, packaging go up or are you holding too much? I must be honest that financials isn't my bag. That would be more my wife and the accountant and the managed accountant. But you're right, like a business will go under and we have had so many periods during the 11 years where cash flow has become so critical that we've had to look at smaller things like should we really spend £200 or £300 when we've got coming up a £5 million turnover because cash flow has become so difficult where maybe customers haven't paid. We also, we had a bad customer who didn't pay £140,000 just over a year ago. And so that rocked the boat so much that we've almost had to start at the bottom, secure loans from banks, private credit against the house. Like it's been quite challenging. And I imagine every SME enterprise goes through exactly the same. It hasn't been plain sailing with the financial aspects. And we've had to take help and we've had to loan and borrow money. And I think that's the difference really between entrepreneurs and maybe managers is that we're willing to put everything on the line. And we're willing to kind of risk it. And we've risked it so many times to make the business work. And I would say at the moment, we're in one of the lucky, happy positions because the last few years have been challenging, especially with all the rising costs. It really has hit everyone hard.
Yeah, well, I think, as you said, everything you just said, I'm yet to meet a business owner that hasn't gone through serious cash flow if they built a successful business that's doing, you know, multiple millions a year in revenue.
Yeah.
But the important thing is that you've got a system and a process to understand what's happening. And it sounds like you have with your management accountant.
Yeah.
And your wife on top of essentially what's going on.
Yeah.
So one thing I just wanted to touch on as well. So you mentioned you had a customer that didn't pay or nearly didn't pay.
Yes.
Is it B2B sales that you focus on, or do you do direct to consumer as well?
Well, we did D2C as well. Yeah. So we have quite a lot of business now going through our website and also through Amazon and then online platforms. Yeah. So D2C, I think it's completely growing. We'll probably hit 300,000 or 400,000 this year on D2C, maybe more. And yeah, that's a big part of the business. Then we do a lot of adverts on, I don't know what you call it now, but we have a lot going through Facebook and Instagram and through Google Ads and just starting on TikTok. And we put a lot into LinkedIn lately to kind of get people to know who we are and what we're doing. So yeah, it's really important to kind of have all aspects running forward.
Yeah, and then your other channel is you've got the private label and then you've got the distributor.
Yeah. Yeah. We work with many sort of wholesalers and distributors across the UK, depending on the region, and some are national. And then we usually only work with one importer per country, because we did have a problem once where we had two in Denmark, which actually ended up us being taken to court, which wasn't very nice. We have shouldn't never have happened. So we work with only one importer, and we're dealing with 14 countries at the moment. But we put a really big drive into international. So 2 weeks ago, I was at a show called Anuga, which is in Cologne, Germany. Next week, I fly out to Chicago in January. We've got a show which is called Gulf Foods, which is in Dubai. And we really want to open up the Middle East market. We haven't got any in Qatar, Kuwait, Dubai, Saudi. These are really strong markets, and they love British products. And then in March, I'm back to the show where it originally started, which is Anaheim, LA. And I can see all the food trends coming through. And I'll probably find, I haven't been there for, this will be the first time in 3 years, I'll probably find that everything's changed again, because the US seems to be where all of the new fads and all the new kind of movements first start. They were doing chia seeds, they were doing collagen 5-10 years ago, and it's only just starting to hit the UK, and then it will go over and start hitting Europe. So that's where all the trends are coming. But we put a really big emphasis on global traveling and global shows to get customers.
Brilliant. And those are kind of direct-to-consumer shows that you're going to?
No, those are looking for an importer in different countries. So, for instance, Dubai Gulf, we will be trying to hopefully find an importer in 4 or 5 of the big countries in the Middle East and in the United Arab Emirates, trying to set up something so that we can be there, we can distribute our product to them, grow the business together, work as a partnership, and make the protein ball company big in their country.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it sounds very exciting. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience or anyone who might be listening who either might be able to support you or might want?
That's a good question. Well, one of the things we did is we went to see a machine really recently, and the machine was for us to kind of try and make things a little bit more automated, but it was in a pet food factory. And so we were in the pet food factory and we walked in and the smell of the ammonia and the eyes were crying and I went to the toilet. It was so disgusting. We walked out, we didn't buy the machine. But what we said is we have to do something for dogs, because in 37 staff, we probably got about 15 dogs in the company. So we started mixing up all of these protein balls for dogs, and we're just using peanut butter and chia, flax, and trying different proteins. And we found that pumpkin protein worked really well. And so we launched a product. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called It's the Dogs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a protein ball for dogs. And it's made with chia and flax and sunflower seeds and peanut butter and roasted peanuts. And it's completely healthy. And we put a little spin on it on the back, where it's one ball for a small dog, 2 for a medium, 3 to 4 to 5 for a large or extra large. And any of the other balls are yours. And then we talk about the story that It's the Dogs is made in the protein ball company with the same ingredients, with the same staff on the same line, in the same like certified factory for humans. Go ahead and eat them yourself. They're that good.
Wow.
Yeah. And I really think that we've hit something. We told a few people and they were like, that's disgusting. I would never eat dog food. And I was like, I get that. Yeah, I get that. But the more we're at shows and we explain it and they try one of the human protein balls, which is the same, and then they try the dog, which is the same, and they're like, No, I get it, actually. Yeah, I quite like the taste of it. And we did a lot of research and we realized that dogs have to have low carb because most dogs are overweight. 50% of dogs are overweight. And so we really spent a lot of time on the recipe to make sure that it was low carb and high protein. And again, that was a hedge. Our big thing is about hedging. Always have one or two or three different kind of angles to your business, because I think when you first start, you're never quite sure which one's going to take off. Mm-hmm. So we just landed a wonderful store called Pets Corner. And I think this is just the start of us producing healthy, humanized pet food, dog food that owners can eat as well.
Yeah, I'll have to get some for my dog.
Yeah, I'll send you some, Tom.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, Matt, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Incredible to hear about the journey you've been on. And for anyone listening who hasn't tried a protein ball from the Protein Ball Company, I would strongly recommend that you go on the website, go on the Instagram page, and get a packet for yourself, because they are delicious. And Matt, I wish you all the best. Thank you for being a guest on the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Saul. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.